To Cat Chat and Dog Talk. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Sean, the natural vet, on our new show. We love cats and dogs and the people who care for them. We're here for 2 whole hours to answer any question you have about your pets. The number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. We'd love to hear from you. You can also email us at radiopetlady@gmail.com before any show, and we'll answer your question on the air. And don't forget that if you write us at radiopetlady@gmail.com, you'll get a free box full of freeze-dried protein treats from Whole Life Pet, good for dogs and cats. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Waruva Pet Food, Precious Cat Litter, Nordic Naturals Omega-3 Fish Oil, and the Honest Kitchen Raw Dehydrated Pet Food made in a human food facility. Cat Chat and Dog Talk is a production of 8 Paws LLC and Dr. Sean Messonnier DVM PC, which are solely responsible for its content. So I want to thank the newest sponsors of the show, Platinum Performance Supplements, the pheromone products Feel Away for cats and Adaptil for dogs, Vectra for parasites, and Halo purely for pets. Please know that all support for the show is by invitation only. These are companies we use ourselves and hope you will show your appreciation for their support by becoming customers too. And Sean, we have a brand new advertiser who I'm going to tell a little bit something about later called VaxiCheck. Would you explain why you recommended they join our show and how you use them, since people are so concerned about over vaccinating? And you're the one who said to me, but there's a test so you don't have to over vaccinate.
Yes, I am really, really excited about welcoming VaxiCheck to our show. It's a product I've been using for probably 4 or 5 months, and the concept I've been using in my practice for probably 15 years. As our listeners know, we try to take a more natural approach to healthcare for pets and other family members. And one of the things we really talk about is not giving unnecessary vaccines to dogs and cats. And the way that I approach this, and many holistic veterinarians approach this, is doing a very simple, inexpensive blood test called a titer test, which measures your pet's antibodies to vaccines they've had in prior years. That test literally lets your pet's body tell us, with a numerical value based upon the blood test, whether or not the antibodies are sufficient to provide protection, in which case more vaccines aren't necessary, or maybe the titers are low, and we can have a discussion with the pet owner about possibly doing vaccines. Now, VaxiCheck came out with an in-office test, which makes this much easier for me. I used to have to send this test out, wait 3 to 4 weeks, and hope it got there through the mail and everything worked out well. Now I can do this test for dogs in my office and get results within minutes. We actually run the test every Tuesday afternoon in my office since we have a little bit of downtime then. So I can get very valid results very inexpensively for pet owners right away. And the good news is, from what I've heard, VaxiCheck is waiting on approval for their cat titer test, which I hope is out in the next couple of months. So then we can do this test for cats and dogs in our office. So I'm really, really excited, Tracy. We've got them as a sponsor. This is great news.
It really is, and you're the one who knew about them. I wasn't even familiar with it. It's a new product from this company. I myself was very frustrated by the idea of titer testing because two of my dogs are now 11, but when one of them was about 8, I thought, well, I don't need to re-vaccinate for rabies, which is a separate issue, because this VaxiCheck checks the parvo distemper
and hepatitis,
which are what puppies get vaccinated for.
Yeah, they're the main core vaccines.
Yeah, the core vaccines. And then it used to be, for many years, there were vets who would re-vaccinate every year and other vets who say, well, maybe every 3 years, but I did understand, and I have Weimaraners who are supposed to be very sensitive to vaccines. I was told that by the rescue that they came from, that first of all, you should never do all the vaccinations at once. But I began to understand by listening to you on the radio and knowing you and research that there's a lot of different situations in which you never have to revaccinate, but you have to find out how many antibodies are in the dog's system.
That's right.
That are still protecting him. So in this case, I decided to do it for rabies because I actually didn't ever think I was supposed to revaccinate for the core vaccines, which I was wrong about, it turns out.
Well, most of the time you don't have to on a very frequent basis, but you're right. You might need to do it every so often. And once again, if the test tells you, you know, what I like about this test is I tell my new clients who are coming to me who've heard about titers, they're excited to have found me because I'm about the only one in the area that does titers. They understand that literally their dog's body is telling me what to do as far as vaccination. So I don't have to think about anything. I don't have to make something up or kind of go with a hunch. The pet's body tells me what it needs, which is really the most holistic thing you can do when you're dealing with pet care or people care.
Well, for me, the problem was that they sent the blood out, like you said, and it was expensive. It was like, I don't know, 5 years ago, it was $57 for the rabies test. I thought, wow, rabies vaccination costs about a third of that. So I waited, and it came back as being kind of borderline, not really fabulous protection. So it meant another vet appointment, and I kind of wasted the money because in the end I needed the rabies vaccination. But in this case, at least from what I read in the literature, it's 20 minutes and $20 to check for all three of the core diseases, which parvovirus is on the East Coast kind of eradicated. But the dogs that are rescuing from the South coming up to the Northeast, many of them are carriers of parvo. They either have never been vaccinated or improperly vaccinated at the wrong time. They're bringing this disease back to the Northeast. So people that aren't even necessarily adopting a rescue dog, just a dog, might be putting a lot of other dogs in the neighborhood at risk. The beauty of this VaxiCheck test is that you don't have to revaccinate if not necessary, but you do know what to vaccinate for if your dog doesn't have protection in his blood. Right? I mean, that's a very different.
One thing I will tell you, though, just so people don't misunderstand, the $20 is actually my cost. I have to mark it up a little bit.
Oh, I see.
That's good that you told me that. It's a lot less expensive than, you know, the lab I was using. My cost was about double that. So I had to mark that up even more. So people are still saving money on this. Obviously, we have to mark up things we're doing. But it's nice because it is about half the price of sending the titers out. In some cases, it's about a fifth of the price from what I've seen some labs charging for titers. And like I said, you can do it right there in the office. I don't do the test. My staff does it. It's very, very easy to do. And there's really no downside to doing it. And as far as the cost goes, you know, I know it costs a little bit more to do the titers than vaccines, but I kind of look at it as if you're doing vaccines your pet doesn't need, number one, you're wasting money, period. Number two, what if doing those cheap vaccines causes illness in your pets? And every time I drive by and I see the low-cost vet in town with the clinic on Saturday, lying around the block, I'm thinking these poor saps are spending $30 and $40 for shots they don't need. And if their pet gets sick, gets cancer or something, think of all the money they've wasted on shots they now have to spend trying to save a pet, and maybe they can't save them at that point.
And there's no one to really stand behind them. I mean, if you go to your own vet and get vaccinated, the companies will stand behind what they've given you, right?
Absolutely.
All right, so I'm gonna give the number, which I think I totally neglected to do. Those of you out there that have any questions for Dr. Sean and me, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. We are here and delighted to answer your questions. I'm going to read the little ad about VaxiCheck because I really am psyched that they've joined us. I think it's a tool, a medical innovation that is something that most people wouldn't know about, and maybe even some vets don't know about it. And I would say to
everybody, most vets don't know about it.
So new. And, you know, I think that when you have a tool like this that's new to the marketplace, it's really important for the consumer, which is the pet owner, to ask for it. And what I would recommend to people, if you're going to have your dog, I always have my dog's yearly exam right around now, the springtime, because they have to be rechecked for Lyme disease and they have to be revaccinated for Lyme disease, which is a vaccination you must get, an immunization every single year. So what I'm going to do before, I've made the appointment, but I'm going to call up the office and say, do you have VaxiCheck? And if they say, what's that? I'll say, find out and get it because I don't want my appointment without VaxiCheck. If they say, well, sure, we have it, no problem. Because they're going to draw blood anyway, this is what they should do with at least some of the blood.
It's just a few more drops of blood. It's not much more to run this test.
Okay, so I'm going to read about VaxiCheck.
Good.
Are you worried about the harmful side effects of over-vaccinating your dog? Is your vet worried about whether your dog still has protection from previous vaccinations? Instead of risking the potential dangers of automatically revaccinating, the solution is VaxiCheck's blood titer test. It's simple, inexpensive, and quick. VaxiCheck is done right in your veterinarian's office while you wait. It tests your dog's blood for antibodies. If the blood shows antibodies to the deadly core diseases, distemper, parvovirus, and hepatitis, you don't need to revaccinate. Otherwise, you can protect your dog if one disease did not show protective immunity by revaccinating only against that illness. VaxiCheck takes the worry out of keeping your dog safe. VaxiCheck should be used on every puppy to confirm that she actually got the protective antibodies from her immunizations. Shelters and rescues should use VaxiCheck when dogs arrive to separate protected pets from unprotected ones. For your dog's safety and your peace of mind, insist on a VaxiCheck test at your dog's yearly checkup so you and your vet make the best decision about long-term health. VaxiCheck for cats is coming soon. So you're right, it's coming this spring. You know, I don't know if I ever mentioned this before on the show, but about my Bedlington Terrier puppy Falstaff, we got these two puppies, Mistress Quickly and Falstaff, years and years ago, and he came from a very nice, good breeder, and he got distemper, and he'd been immunized. Now, if I had bought that puppy, and he was not from – there weren't even puppy mills in those days, to be honest with you. There were only, like, proper good breeders. And when he went for his first checkup, if I'd done VaxiCheck, I would have known he had no immunity to distemper. He could have been revaccinated.
Right.
And he lived. He didn't die, and it's a deadly disease. He lived with a great deal of me sitting in a steamy bathroom. But he always looked sickly, and he never turned white like Bedlingtons do. He stayed a strange dark gray like the puppy color. So I think that – I don't know if you've had people bring in puppies and discovered when they got diseases that the immunization that they had gotten, whether from you or someone else, didn't take, because immunizations are not 100% reliable, right?
No, they're not. And, you know, I've been fortunate because we don't see a lot of infectious disease in my practice, which is really good. We see these more chronic problems, which is really the great thing about holistic medicine, because we don't have a lot of drugs to help older pets, middle-aged and older pets, with some of these chronic things. But since you mentioned Bedlington Terriers, I need to tell you a story, a very sad story.
Sad, but you have great stories. I love your stories.
Yeah, I know you like my story. This is good. This is our listeners really enjoy this. So many years ago, when I first got out of school, I worked for a vet who I found out was kind of a quack, basically. And I'll tell stories about him throughout our years on the radio. We have many stories. But one of my favorite.
What do we refer to him as? Dr. Quack?
That's fine.
Okay, Dr. Quack.
There are many Dr. Quacks, but old Dr. Quack would be good. So anyway, old Dr. Quack, he saw this Bedlington Terrier. Actually, it was his client. I was the new vet there. And he was out of town one day, and the little Bedlington came in. Now, keep in mind that what I'm going to tell you should never happen. So this is why the story is sad. So all right, so this doctor was out of town, and he'd been seeing this Bedlington Terrier for many years. And for the last 3 years, this dog had diarrhea. It had gone undiagnosed. Now, it didn't have diarrhea every day, but it had it most days. So it kind of started every so often, then it became most days this dog had diarrhea. Well, Dr. Quack basically told her, well, you know, Bedlingtons have a sensitive stomach. I hate to hear that term because I don't know any breed that has a sensitive stomach. Right. I know breeds that get sick. I don't know any breed that has a sensitive stomach. I think that's just a cop-out. So anyway, this dog had been treated with a variety of things, obviously drugs. We weren't doing anything holistic at this practice, and the dog wasn't doing better. So I told the owner, okay, one thing your dog has not been treated for is whipworms. Whipworms are very difficult to diagnose. We need to treat them as if they have whipworms because it's very easy to treat and very, very effective. So the long and short of it is we treated the dog for whipworms. It didn't get better. I said, okay, now we've got to go see a specialist. Your dog has had diarrhea for 3 years. This is way too long. We got to get it treated. So we went to the specialist, and the dog was scoped with an endoscope to look for inflammatory bowel disease, IBD. Well, the bad news is this dog had IBD literally from the mouth to the anus. This dog had worse IBD than any dog I've seen, was treated with steroids, was euthanized 2 weeks later from the IBD. This is a dog that never should have died. So my moral is, if you're going to a doctor that says your dog's chronic vomiting or weight loss or diarrhea or cat for that matter is due to a sensitive stomach, find somebody else. Pets don't have sensitive stomachs. I'm not saying an individual pet couldn't have a sensitive stomach in the sense that maybe it has to have a special food to get it better. But for chronic problems, to simply say, what's a sensitive stomach and all dogs and cats of this breed are going to have diarrhea their whole lives, baloney. Run, don't walk from that doctor.
I think that's extremely good advice. I'm going to tell you a story about one of my dogs who I thought had a sensitive stomach. This is quite odd and peculiar, and then we'll go to a little break. And if anyone – don't worry about interrupting us, guys, if you're out there. 888-627-6008. Feel free to call in. One of my Weimaraners, Teddy, had his first bout of a stomach problem about 2 years ago, and it was extreme. It was like seeing a horse colic. He was stretching and moaning, and he couldn't get comfortable. And he went outside to try and eat grass, which we all – some people don't know this, but if your dog is that upset of a stomach that he's driven to eat grass to force himself to throw up, that's not okay. Don't let him eat the grass. Further irritates the stomach. You got to close him inside. He was in agony from his belly. He started to chew on furniture. I mean, he's not a dog who'd ever destroy it. Yeah, it was really bad. I thought, oh, my God, he's in a lot of pain. So, of course, by the time I realized that there was really something wrong, oh, my God, I thought, is he, you know, is this bloat? But his stomach wasn't distended, and he didn't have the classic signs of bloat, which is a very distended, like a balloon belly, right?
Yes.
So, of course, now it's night, and the emergency hospital is an hour and 10 minutes away. In the car, zooming along, he chewed up one of the back seat armrests, chewed it, completely shredded it in this agony of pain in his gut. And I thought, oh my God, I'm losing him. This is terrible. I mean, he's only, you know, 4 years old. What could this be? And I've called ahead to them, which you're supposed to do with an emergency place. They always recommend that. Tell them what you're coming in with, how far out you are, what your situation is. And I knew to do this because I used to be a volunteer EMT in East Hampton, and we always called the hospital when we were about 20 minutes out and gave all the particulars on a patient so they could have things set up for them if they needed it. So I got there, and they were just almost ready to do bloat surgery because of the symptoms. So I get in, and they take the dog back, and they do an ultrasound of his gut, and they don't see anything particular, and he's clearly – not bloating, but he's in extreme agony. I mean, they're giving him pain shots and, you know, everything they could think of. And I didn't want to bring him home. I didn't want to leave him there, poor bastard. But, you know, you don't want to bring him home an hour and 10 minutes away. What if he dies on me? A twisted intestine. I don't know what it could be. He was in agony. So they say, no, really, honestly, we're not. They did blood work. They did everything you can imagine, and they couldn't find anything wrong. No high white count or red count or whatever it might be. So I take the dog home, and I've got him on painkillers, and I've got him on Pepcid AC, and he just gets over it. So, all right, this was this one bout. It seemed like a freaky thing. Put it out of my mind. About 6 months later, the same thing all over again. He's in agony, and I rush to my own vet because now I see it starting early, and they go, oh, they know the dog, and they think, oh, this is he's really sick. He's so sick. Oh, my God, you're right. He's in agony. I had a friend for dinner who was an acupuncture holistic vet, and she was checking his pulse and said, this dog is, you know, like really in distress. You got to go to the doctor. And, of course, that same night, he wasn't any better, and they'd given him various pills. Back to the emergency place, feeling a little odd because now it's 6 months later, same thing. They can't figure it out. There's absolutely no solution to it. So I think I have a dog with a sensitive stomach, I now tell myself. So I now give him Pepcid AC every night before bed, thinking that'll solve it. And a few months later, I have this apple that I have often given him as a treat. Cut a slice of apple, give him a piece of apple. He eats the apple. He loves it. The other dogs won't eat the apple. So I start to give him more little slices of apple, and I think, oh, my God, it's the apple. Apple made him this sick, the acidity in it. A whole lot of apple on an empty stomach in the evening. Sure enough, I've never fed him another apple, and he's never had another thing wrong. Isn't that
weird? That is
really
weird. Yeah, but now, see, he didn't have a sensitive stomach, but he had a sensitivity to the apple, which you were able
That's
to
right.
figure out.
Not a sensitive stomach. I was diagnosing for myself something that didn't make sense. There was a trigger that I couldn't figure out. I tried to think back in each case, what had he eaten that day? They said, did he get into something? There's nothing to get into here other than mini donkey manure, but that's his favorite snack, and that doesn't seem to disagree with him. Anyway, it's very strange when you think by mistake that your dog has a sensitive stomach. There's either something like that you're doing that's a mistake, or there's a chronic inflammation or problem that needs to be looked at seriously. I was ready to do anything necessary, do exploratory surgery.
Well, something I want to say about that, especially since you're the cat lady, this is so important. Cats especially, dogs a little bit, but especially cats, if they have IBD, inflammatory bowel disease, which is basically caused in most cases by the cat or dog's body literally attacking its own intestinal tract, forming some antibodies against the intestines. However, in cats especially, any source of chronic inflammation in cats can easily turn into cancer, which is why cats that are overvaccinated can get cancer. So if you have a cat with IBD and you put off going to the doctor and put off going to the doctor, or the doctor, like Dr. Quack I worked for, puts off getting the proper diagnosis, cats with IBD, that IBD can turn into lymphoma. And that's cancer, and we don't want that. We want to stop it before those lymphocytes get so much inflammation, the inflammation causes them to keep reproducing. During these reproductive cycles, you may have mutations, which can cause lymphoma. I can usually cure IBD. I can't usually cure lymphoma, so we need to be really, really careful with this.
Yeah.
Don't put it off. I'm not saying you have to get a biopsy the first day or the first week, but if your cat's had IBD or some weird GI signs for maybe 2 months or more, and we can't get it under control, we've got to break down, spend the money, get the specialist to do the biopsy. Then we can use some medicine short-term and a bunch of supplements and proper diet and usually save those cats and actually cure many of them.
It's a really good point, and something that we're going to go to a break, but when we come back, I think it's worth continuing this conversation, because the whole concept that inflammation is the basis of all disease process, I think, is something really important that we all understand, and not something you can just shrug and say, oh, that's just that dog. So let's go off to our break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation, and anyone who would like to ask us a question or make a comment, 888-627-6008. We'll be right back. This show is brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Read the ingredients on the label of your own dry dog food. Can you identify what's in there? Halo uses no inferior rendered byproducts, meals, or chemicals in any of their products. Halo is purely focused on your pet's well-being. No chicken meal or other rendered meats. Halo foods are guaranteed safe and have never been recalled. Halo's entire line, including treats, supplements, and grooming supplies, will help your pet be vibrant, happy, and healthy inside and out. This show is also brought to you by PetFlow.com, an online store for pet foods and more that is privately owned by pet lovers like you who want to give their dogs and cats the best nutrition possible with the least hassle for themselves. The real value is the auto delivery schedule. For people who go to the same store and have to drag home the same food every month, PetFlow.com is perfect for you. There are over 200 brands, in particular the ones we love on the show, like Halo, Waruva, The Honest Kitchen, Nordic Naturals, Precious Cat Litter, and many more. There is free shipping with a minimum $49 order and no sales tax except New York, New Jersey, and Nevada. The link is on RadioPetLady.com. Support for Dog Talk comes from Precious Cat Litter, which is privately owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian whose litters are designed to appeal to kitties and protect their health. Catattract Litter has a blend of herbs which entice cats into the litter box and has helped get thousands of cats back into their litter boxes. Precious Cat donates litter to shelters and rescues across the country. Support for Dog Talk also comes from PetFlow.com, which carries all the Precious Cat litters with special offers at RadioPetLady.com. We are back. And I think just the whole topic of inflammation, Sean, is something that in the holistic world, whether it's for humans or dogs and cats, I think the recognition that inflammation is itself a disease process and sort of sets the stage for other disease processes to get a chance to grab on. Isn't that one of the kind of fundamental thought processes of holistic wellness and holistic care?
You know, pretty much if you look at anything going on in the medical profession, and we're leaning more towards the holistic, but I think even some of our conventional counterparts are starting to appreciate that for many chronic diseases not caused by infections, not caused by viruses or bacteria or yeast fungi, inflammation is the starting point, whether we're talking heart disease, certainly cancer, arthritis, etc. So if we can prevent or modulate inflammation by eating or feeding our pets the right food, not over vaccinating, not over using drugs, not putting things into or on the pet's body or our own bodies that could cause inflammation, which, once again, using cats as an example, chronic GI inflammation causes so many of these lymphocytes to mutate and become cancerous. And once again, if you can stop it at the inflammation stage, that's a great way to prevent many problems, including cancer. So we have to be just so aware of inflammation and natural ways we can treat it, and sometimes conventional drug ways to treat it as well.
And I remember getting an email once, I didn't save it for this show, but someone who wrote in to me and said that their cat had had diarrhea for, a year. And her question wasn't, gosh, shouldn't I be worried that my cat had diarrhea for a year? It was, so there's this product called XYZ, and can you just tell me, is this a good product or not? And I wrote back and said, the most important thing to know is your cat shouldn't have diarrhea. What's your vet thinking? I think this must have been the offspring of Dr. Quack. I mean,
Dr. Quacks.
It's amazing. I mean, it's such a sign of ill health, like a screaming sign. There's very few other ways to know for sure that a cat isn't well. I mean, they hide everything so well, but if they're squirting diarrhea, you got a problem, folks.
Absolutely.
Not something you can ignore. All right, now, here's an email that I've been waiting to read for you. Remember last week I was scratching my brain. I couldn't remember the name of this, what to me was extremely strange product called
Colloidal
Silver.
Okay.
So this is for Lou in Southern California. Poor Lou. I feel so bad. This was like, three or four weeks ago he wrote to me. And then he wrote back and said, look, I can't listen to the show live. I teach writing and my class is on a Tuesday night. But I've got to know Dr. Sean's answer and I'll listen to the podcast. And those of you that are listening to the podcast, thank you so much for having figured out that if you aren't free to listen to us live, all the shows have a long shelf life. Here's the question. Do you know of a danger to the use of colloidal silver in cats? One of the writers I mentor left the front door open and my 10-year-old tuxedo male cat got out and got bitten. Diagnosed with feline HIV, he was deathly ill for many weeks. Blood tests, series of pricey injections to try to reverse the virus, a Western titer test, weeks of giving him sub-Q fluids at home, and we could not get rid of the newly diagnosed feline HIV. Which, I mean, there's a lot of questions in here that I want to ask you, Sean. So to build up his immune system, I put Tuxedo and his two housemates, both feral rescues, on 5 to 6 drops of colloidal silver in their daily fresh drinking water. An amazing side effect was no fleas in 2012, despite unusually high heat and humidity throughout our summer. Tuxedo was feeling so much better a year later. He eats and plays well and is even more joy to me than before his illness. Thank you for any opinion or information you can offer. So first, fill me in. What is colloidal silver?
Okay, so I'm going to probably upset a lot of people, but if you'll bear with me, I'm going to give you the straight poop, as they say on this. So colloidal silver is basically silver in a colloid form, which is a chemical term. I have to go back and remember my inorganic chemistry, but it's basically just the silver particles in a suspension. And silver does have antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal properties. Now, I've never heard of it being used to support or strengthen the immune system. I've heard of it more as a natural anti-infective agent, which it is. Now, you have to be careful with this product. There are reports mainly in people of getting too much and actually turn purple from the silver. It's a condition. There's a medical name for it. And, you know, silver is a heavy metal. So if you take too much, you can obviously die from that, so you have to be careful and trust the manufacturer. It's not an alternative therapy that I typically recommend just because I have other things that I think work better without the potential side effects. But I don't mind if clients want to try it if it comes from a good manufacturer and try it topically or in the pet's water. I've not heard of it helping for fleas. And while this person brings up the flea comment, let me answer, kind of address that, then I'll go over your other questions, Tracy. Okay. So let's talk about fleas. Now, one thing we have to be careful of, whether we're talking about a natural medicine or a conventional medicine, is a cause and effect relationship. Right. You know, my dog has never had fleas in her whole life.
Me too.
I could say, well, it's because of the food she eats, or it's because of the shampoo I use, which is my own shampoo, or it's because of this or that. But the reality is she just has never had fleas.
Right.
So it's for me to say, if you gave your pet colloidal silver and they don't have fleas, is there a cause and effect? It doesn't have any known anti-parasite problems. However, if this person said, well, every year my dog has had fleas until I put colloidal silver in her water, maybe there's cause and effect, or maybe it was a good year for no fleas. So we just have to be careful of assuming something worked. And that's actually one of the criticisms that many conventional people have against natural remedies. We'll use natural remedies, the pet gets better, but would they have gotten better anyway? So we always have to be careful. How much is cause and effect? How much is coincidence or natural healing from the pet? And sometimes those are hard questions to answer, but I always get bothered when I see people on my internet group say, well, I did this to my dog or cat, and it worked overnight, and now the dog's cured of this. Maybe they're cured anyway. We don't know just from that one, you know, that one instance. So we have to be careful.
Well, that's certainly the most unscientific thing in the world. And as you point out, the cause and effect is something that not only is there no proof of, but it's very dangerous because if other people think, oh, I'll do that too, they could be hurting their pet or they could be giving them something that really might work and they've wasted the time. Now, how does my understanding of feline HIV is that it's not curable. Am I wrong about that?
Well, cats in the wild that are exposed to a lot of these viruses, like FIP, which is a mutated coronavirus, or leukemia, or FIV, which is immunodeficiency virus, many cats in the wild, and I don't know how they determine this because I don't do all these studies, but can fight off these viruses. It's only when the virus gets in the pet system, the immune system allows it to take hold, or maybe it's a stronger strain of the virus, where they might not be able to cure themselves of it. And those are the cats that we see that are sick. Now, having said that, you can have a cat with FIV that can live a normal life, just like many people with HIV that never really get sick or die. They just kind of have the virus in their body.
Right.
But as a rule, we probably don't really cure that virus, especially if a pet has chronic illness.
So he's saying the cat felt better, and we have absolutely no way of knowing if it was this silver being put in the water of not only this cat, but the other cats.
Yeah. So you just have to be very careful. And, you know, once again, my goal as a holistic doctor is to try to really be objective and to try to honestly tell people, you know, when you come to my practice, I have different kinds of cases. So a lot of the cases I see are pets that are chronically ill, have not responded to other veterinarians' conventional treatments. So I have a pretty good feeling if they haven't responded to some other multiple treatments for several months or sometimes several years, and they get better with my natural therapy, I'm probably pretty sure my therapy actually worked because nothing else had worked, and that's the only change in the cat or dog's environment. But if I have a pet with an acute problem, yes, I tend to use natural therapies more. Can I say for sure the natural therapy was responsible for the pet getting better? Not all the time, but in fairness, I couldn't even say that was true for the drug. It could have been such a mild illness, the pet would have gotten better anyway. They came to me, my medicine made them feel better, but the body fought off the problem, which is actually our goal anyway, for the body to fight stuff.
Right. Well, you think of the olden days off the back of a covered wagon and the people that were called snake oil salesmen, and they would sell bottles of whatever it was. They might have called it snake oil or something else, and it might have just been a bunch of brewed bat dung, but it claimed to cure everything and anything from baldness to impotence to digestive problems to anything you can imagine, and people would buy these snake oil bottles, and everybody would take them, and a lot of people must have said, oh, it cured my this, that, and the other thing, when, of course, it really couldn't have had possibly any curative ability at all. But people believed it, or as you say, they were going to get over it anyway. So I think it kind of – sometimes these sorts of remedies fall into that category. Having said that, conventional medicine can often work the same way. One can spend a huge amount of money and undergo a huge amount of tests and even interventions, and it will seem as though that treatment plan is what cured you or made you better, when maybe your body was just going to get better anyway.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's one of the things when I talk to conventional doctors about, and they're like, well, you know, you can't prove that your therapies work because the pet could have gotten better anyway. Well, first of all, like I said, many of my pets have chronic illness. So if they were going to get better anyway, why didn't they get better for the last year with all of your drugs? But the second approach is, well, you're right. Some of my pets, I don't know that they got better with my natural therapies, but I have to be honest and say, can we prove they got better with your drug? Well, not all the time. No. So we have to be fair with each other. It's just that sometimes they don't want to look at their therapies. You know what's interesting? I wrote an article for a vet magazine many years ago about using homeopathy to help pets with heart disease. And I got one of my typical hate letters from a veterinarian that read this article. Well, I keep these in a file for my days when I'm really bored and I want a good laugh. Seriously. So I got this hateful letter where this doctor was saying, well, you know, Dr. Sean, you know, in general, 70% of the pets that go to the vet are going to get better anyway. So I wonder what your cure ratio is for your patients. I bet it's probably 70%. Of course, he was being a smart ass and saying that I was no better. So I started thinking to myself, I said, well, first of all, he's right. Most pets and people with mild illness will get better no matter what you do. That tells me we can all heal ourselves, which is all I'm trying to do is aid that process. So you're right. But also, like I said, most of my patients would have already gotten better if they were going to get better. But then I started thinking some more. And I thought, you know what? If this guy is telling the truth, which he is, that most pets with mild problems would get better on their own, then basically he's ripping off the public, because 7 out of the 10 calls that come into his office tomorrow are going to get better anyway. Why doesn't his receptionist just tell these people, your dog or cat will get better? You don't need to come in. We only need to see the 30% that aren't getting better. Obviously, well, you're laughing, but isn't that true? I mean, isn't he ripping people off, telling them that I got these drugs that'll help you, when he knows 7 out of 10 are going to get better anyway? The problem, of course, is we don't know that.
We don't know which is going to be on the 30%.
But if he's mad at me for my snake oil, then I can be mad at him for his drugs, because it's the same end result. 7 out of 10 are going to get better anyway, except, like I said, I don't get that luxury, because I get a lot of very, very sick pets that natural therapies can only work for, because unfortunately the conventional stuff hasn't worked. The pets have gotten sicker, sometimes even from the drugs, and it's time to move on to something that might help the pet.
And the things that you use are not actually concoctions that you've whipped up in the back office. They really are made by very serious companies that make supplements that are based on historical proof and ingredients. And it's not just fairy dust.
No. I mean, now, once again, if you get into Chinese herbs, there are sometimes some strange things in there. But nevertheless, there's a history in Chinese herbology of those things working. And once again, you can get to some of these stranger formulas, you can stick more mainstream. It doesn't really matter, as long as you understand what's in there and what we're trying to do. I think that's the main goal, the main thing to understand.
I once had a torn ACL in my knee from skiing, and I went to the orthopedist. He was a terribly nice man, insanely busy. I mean, I've never seen an office so busy in all my days. You'd have an appointment and you'd wait no less than 3 or 4 hours. It's just, he was the main game in town. And so he examined my knee and said, you know, we have to wait, which I'd sort of been told at the ski place in Deer Valley anyway, have to wait for the swelling and the inflammation to go down before you can do any surgery or even evaluate it properly. So at this point, the swelling and so forth was going down. And he said, you know, I could wait for it to go down, wait the 6 weeks, and then do the surgery, and then you do physical therapy. He said, but the truth is your own body lays down scar tissue that does pretty much exactly what we do in a surgery. He said, so probably not a lot of orthopedists will tell this to their patients, but I can either do the surgery and you'll recover quite well with the physical therapy, or you can not have the surgery and your body will do the exact same stabilization for you that my surgery would. I mean, I thought that to me, this guy belonged on the highest pedestal in the world. How incredibly honest. And I thought, talk about snake oil. Think how many thousands of people have ACL surgery and repairs when their own body would have laid down scar tissue, according to him. And he was like a knee guy. Knees was his, you know, bread and butter. I thought that was fabulous.
As I've told you, I'm going to be doing some talks this weekend at a vet conference and again in a few weeks at another vet conference. And one of my talks is an introductory talk to holistic medicine, where we go through a lot of the arguments that the skeptics have against using natural therapies. Then one is, of course, that this stuff doesn't work or the pets are going to get better anyway. And I saw a very interesting article in one of the major national newspapers. I think it was USA Today. It was in other newspapers too several years ago. And I always make sure I talk about this. And this is where whoever was doing this study went to a number of human cardiologists and asked them, okay, of all the tests you do, of the surgeries you do, heart surgery and stents and all this kind of stuff, and all the drugs you use for your heart patients, how many of these diagnostic tests and therapies that you use, how many of them do you have really, really, really good proof that these things work, and how many do you not have proof they work? And they said, well, to be honest, you know, the ones that we really, really have proof that there's really good case control studies, probably only about 30, 40% of what we do, there's really good proof behind it, which means 60 to 70% of what they do, there's not really good proof that the stuff even works. So then they were asked, well, then why do you do the 60 or 70% of these surgeries and medicines when you just admitted there's no proof they work? And they said, well, that's what we've been trained to do. That's what's at all the meetings and what they teach in school. There's no proof, but that's what we're taught to do, so we do it. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we do from a conventional perspective and from this holistic perspective where maybe there isn't proof. And my goal is always just to make sure nobody's being a hypocrite. If you're upset with me for doing holistic medicine because you say there's no proof that it works, which there is proof. If you say there's no proof, though, then I can say the same thing about you, and you have to be honest and say, you're right, a lot of what I do doesn't work either as far as proof. Now, it may work clinically, but as far as scientific proof, you know, we have to be honest with each other.
Or it can all come around and bite you in the arse. Because all those hip replacements have poisoned people and are breaking down in their bodies. And that was supposedly the gold standard. How fabulous. And not only did they keep implanting these in people, but they knew they were going bad and kept selling them and they kept implanting them. So there's an awful lot of stuff that goes on in traditional medicine that's just wicked. I mean, it's wicked. So it's there's a lot. I think finger pointing should be put to a minimum in these cases. And there is a threat to traditional medicine from a more holistic point of view because they don't understand it. And if you don't understand something, you might as well call it a witch. You know, it's like many things were called witchcraft back in the day because no one understood it and it frightened them. We need to go for a break. And when we come back, we've got Carol on the line. Let me give you guys the number, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. We're going to go for a quick break. When we come back, Carol has a question for us. We'll be right back. This show is also supported by Halo, a small private company owned in part by Ellen DeGeneres, where they genuinely are dedicated to pet health. The company emphasizes giving back by making impressive charitable donations through freekibble.com to shelters and rescues because they believe that less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition too. You are what you eat is true for animals as well as for us, which is why Halo is the only kibble I feed my own dogs. Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no scary mystery ingredients that are permitted in rendered kibble. There are even shreds of real vegetables along with the dry nuggets. It's why I'd love you to try Halo too. The good folks at PetFlow.com have found a way to surprise you and your pets every month with their Spoiled Rotten Club. There's a separate Spoiled Rotten box for cats and dogs, and each is filled with treats, toys, and accessories you may have never seen before. And all the edible products are made in the USA. It costs only $24.99, which is less than the actual cost of all the amazing goodies in the box. And shipping is free. It makes a great gift that keeps on giving, especially if you're the grandparent of fur kids, because everybody knows grandparents spoil the grandchildren. Go to RadioPetLady.com for the link from PetFlow.com right to the Spoiled Rotten Club. Support for Dog Talk comes from Precious Cat Litter, which is privately owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian whose litters are designed to appeal to kitties and protect their health. Respiratory relief litter is low dust for pussycats with asthma, which makes it healthy for people and other pets in the family, too. Precious Cat donates litter to shelters and rescues across the country. Support for Dog Talk also comes from PetFlow.com, which carries all the Precious Cat litters with special offers at RadioPetLady.com.
We're back. You're listening to Cat Chat and Dog Talk with Dr. Sean, the natural vet, and myself, Tracy Hotchner. The number is 888-627-6008. If you have any comment or question, we would love you to join us as Carol is doing now. Hey, Carol, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent. How about you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
What can we help you
with? I have a question about the cat kidney problems.
All right.
I had two cats who died a couple of years ago. And I did research at the time, and so at this point, my cats only eat wet food, and they only, and I put water in it.
Nice.
They have no dry food at all, and they don't get treats, except I did order your little Whole Life treats. I have a funny story to tell you about that. But what I don't understand, and I had another one of my cats just recently have a urinary tract infection. She had to go through two rounds of antibiotics, and they ran the blood work, and that the kidney numbers were just slightly elevated, just slightly. So they suggested that I give her Atazil. I think it's called Atazil.
Okay. Azadil.
Azadil?
Yes.
And they suggested that I feed her food that is low in protein. And what I don't understand is if I'm doing, you know, if all their, and I feed them Proplan. They eat Proplan, and I have another question about that, because some of it has rice in it. And I didn't know, and that's technically a carb, so I don't know if that's good or not good. But they only get Proplan and nothing else. So if I'm doing all that, I don't understand how she got this and how this is elevated. I mean, could it be because before 2 years ago they had dry food?
No, that would, I don't think it would, that would be the case now. How old are the cats?
This one is, she is, 10.
So she's a little bit getting up there in years. You know, I'd love to know what Sean thinks, but I always turn to Dr. Elizabeth Hodgkin's book, Your Cat. It's, to me, just like the greatest little medical primer on everything to do with cats. And if you just turn to the page on Azadil, she's completely opposed to the use of it. She said that long-term using cats, that there's safety studies have not been done. She's quite opposed to the drug completely. And one of the points that she makes throughout her book and in her work is that the usual markers for kidney disease in cats, the BUN level, B-U-N, is not a diagnostic marker. It's misused and misunderstood by a lot of vets. So regardless of what Sean says, and he may have a whole nother way of looking at it, I would highly recommend that you buy her book, Your Cat. If you go to my website, radiopetlady.com, you could just click on my experts. Uh-huh. She's on there, and there's a link to her book on Amazon. It's a wonderful book, Carol, and if it helped you to understand CRD, which is chronic renal disease, better, and how natural it is for subkidney failure to happen as cats get older, and to understand the relationship of the numbers that are used and how diagnostic they really are or are not, it would be probably really useful to take into your vet too. Because it's a book by another vet, a highly regarded vet, who had a feline-only practice for a long time. And she refers to the new improved methods for managing CRD, chronic renal disease, in cats. And that drug is not one of them. Sean, is this whole issue of a tiny bit of an elevated number for kidney disease something that you're aware of or not so much?
Well, how old is your cat again, Carol?
She's about 10.
Okay, and what were the numbers? I know you were. What were her BUN or creatinine numbers?
I'm going to get the paper right now to see if.
Okay. As cats get middle-aged to older, they do come down with some kidney issues. Now, I think sometimes some conventional doctors ignore those, which I don't do. Sometimes they get excited and over-treat those things. So I tend to make sure they're on a good diet, and especially we've talked about the importance of wet food, especially for cats with things like diabetes or kidney disease or bladder problems, to make sure they're on that kind of a diet. We might want to supplement with, like, the Nordic Naturals, a good fish oil, antioxidants. We have some herbs in our practice we'll use. The Azadil I'm not opposed to using. It's actually a special probiotic mixture. I don't typically use it a lot because I think we have things that I like better, but I haven't had the problems, and I'd be interested to hear what Dr. Hodgkin says about that. But, you know, once again, if the numbers are not that high, we don't have to get overly aggressive in therapy. I'm not a big Proplan fan unless that's the only thing the cat will eat or the cat needs to eat it for a reason. I think any sort of natural food that's a canned version, maybe even adding extra liquid, would be a good thing to do if the cat's values are changing enough and we can monitor the blood and urine values every 3 to 6 months now and just make sure we're not losing track of maybe a sudden elevation in these values. So did you find the values for us?
Yes. The bun was 35, and they said the range is 10 to 30. And
yeah,
the creatinine is 2.2, and they said the range is 0.3 to 2.1.
It's completely normal.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds pretty normal. You know, I'd certainly have it rechecked in a month or so. And just monitor that. At this point, if she were in my practice, I'd make sure, like I said, run a good canned food, probably the fish oil and an antioxidant. And then if those values are slowly going up, we'll do some other herbal or homeopathic remedies.
When you said Proplan, Carol, is that a canned version of Proplan? Because we think of Proplan as a dry food.
Yeah, they don't get any dry food at all.
But have you looked at the ingredients? Is it a high-carb wet food? Because some of the ones that have the same name as a dry food often are a wet version of a dry food with a very high carbohydrate content. So you think you're feeding a meat diet in a can, but you're really feeding a carb diet in a can. I'm not saying that's the case. I don't know the ingredients, but if you had a can nearby, we could go.
I have one in front of me.
Read us off the first five or six ingredients.
Crude protein, 10%.
No. Read the ingredient list.
No, read the actual ingredients because they never tell the carbs on those labels. What does it say are the actual ingredients? Is the first word chicken or turkey?
Yeah, I see. Okay. Water sufficient for processing.
That's okay.
Tuna, wheat gluten, chicken, liver, shrimp, protein, rice, meat byproducts, corn, starch.
See, that's the reason I don't like that food, all that stuff.
Okay, so, Carol, you know, first of all, you don't want tuna in your cat's food, the large body tuna that is used in cheaper cat foods. I have no idea what the price of this is. That's not the point. But large body tuna is not at all safe for cats. It's full of heavy metals, just like they tell humans that they should limit their eating of tuna from a can to no more than 3 times a week. And if you eat sushi, to, again, only 3 times a week tuna. So you wouldn't want tuna as a regular part of your cat's diet. Now, Waruva has a number of fish-based foods, but they use skipjack tuna. It's a different fish. It's a smaller-bodied fish. But when you hear the word corn of any kind or wheat gluten having been one of the big markers of a kind of like a red flag or danger signal in the big pet food recall, it's a binder that often is used to make protein ingredients and carbohydrate ingredients bind them together so they appear to be a piece of meat when in fact it's a manufactured product. When you see the word meat byproducts, my book, The Cat Bible, has a pretty good list of all the words that will appear on a label and what they really mean. You never in a quality pet food ever want to see the word animal fat as opposed to chicken fat or a name source, and you never want to see meat byproducts. You might want to see byproducts are questionable because it could be marvelous organ meat and it could be just nasty intestinal leavings, but when it just says animal or meat, that could be from any animal on the planet and any meat on the planet, anything at all, including very scary things. So it must be named protein sources. So we'd love to see you get a food that has that in it. I'm just going to share a little bit with you because we have the time, and I'm really fascinated by this issue of protein levels in cat food and in blood levels and the relationship between kidney disease and protein. I'm just going to, because also Sean would like to know, just read you this little bit from Dr. Hodgkin's book, Your Cat, about bun levels. And this is so interesting because the very way they come up with what a bun level should be to be normal, the way they come up with the normal range, it's based on animals that have been used in research that were fed only a carbohydrate kibble diet. So they base these numbers on cats that weren't given appropriate diets for the obligate carnivore in the first place. So here's what she said. Of note is the fact that cats on diets with naturally high levels of protein, meaning a good high-quality canned food, can have bun levels that are somewhat higher than the so-called normal ranges that most laboratories report to veterinarians. This is true in even perfectly healthy cats. This is because urea is a non-toxic byproduct of protein metabolism. It does not cause a cat to feel sick or become debilitated, but has been used as a signal flag for insufficient kidney function in dogs and cats for decades. Unfortunately, the studies that were used to determine what normal levels of bun were in the cat did not take into account what these levels would be if the cat ate a diet with natural levels of protein. They were studies of cats on the relatively lower amounts of dietary protein in commercial foods. Veterinarians whose patients are on higher protein diets need to be aware of this difference. They also need to be aware that some degree of elevation is normal in such patients and is not harmful. This will be less a problem when reporting laboratories adjust their normal bun ranges upward to more accurately reflect what happens in cats on higher protein diets. So, I mean, this is one of those, and she worked for years at Purina and for years at Hill's. Years. She knows how the formulas have come up with. She knows all these things that go into the making of pet food and the measuring of pet food. And she also had her own feline-only clinic. So she's very, very knowledgeable in what goes on behind the scenes. And don't you think it's amazing, Sean, that the normal range is based on a diet that would not even be the optimal healthy diet for a cat? So
sure.
The whole thing is skewed wrong from the get-go. You know,
yeah, I mean, I think you got to keep that in mind when you look at these laboratory values. You also have to understand, too, and this is one of the books I wanted to write and still may write, is about understanding laboratory values. When you look at what's normal, the way that this is done, and it has to be done this way statistically, is that you're going to get about 10% of pets who are normal, but whose blood values or urine values, whatever we're talking about, will never fall into the normal range.
Yes.
Because you can't make the normal range so wide that you include sick pets in there. So we all have pets who fall outside the normal range, but they're totally okay.
Yes.
And that's part of understanding and being a good doctor, to know when a value is maybe suspicious or when it's normal for that pet. And if you're not sure, simply repeating these values every few months and finding out every time we run the blood test, this cat runs the same value, this is normal for this cat, even
yes.
though according to the lab, it's not normal for them. And that's okay. That's fine.
But as she says, that at some point the labs have to wake up and smell the protein.
And
that, that all cats, even though, as you're saying, each is, first of all, an individual. And second of all, if they're on a diet totally different than the one on which the values are based of normal, then it's a yardstick that's useless to use in the case of a cat being fed a higher quality diet. Now, I will say, Carol, that it would be great to see you have a look. Go to RadioPetLady.com, and there's a downloadable, printable list of Cat Chat approved foods, which only means they have only no more than 10% carbohydrates in the canned food. That's what makes them approved. And if anybody looks at the list and says, well, what about some other brand that's come along since I compiled the list, I'm thrilled to add it. The more good foods on there, the better. The more high-quality cat foods that they make, the happier we are.
Right.
So, and then you have a better choice to make, you know. This is, I think, an example of where they take – a kind of a kibble-minded recipe and kind of adjust that and put it in a can. So you may be paying meat prices for carbs, and that often happens.
Yeah. Well, and I thought that was a very good quality food.
Well, you know,
other people I've talked to, you know, they said, yeah, that's really good. You know, it's better than, you know, Purina and those. So that's why I bought it.
Well, the thing is, I do believe, if I'm not wrong, that Propan's plan's actually owned by Purina, I'm pretty sure.
It is, yes.
Yeah, so it can't be better than Purina because it is Purina. But there's no such thing as, you know, a brand being good or bad. It's all in the ingredients. It's like what's in the recipe, right?
Right.
And so you really have to read the can labels. And I think that it'll give you a lot more confidence when you have a chance to look at the labels and know what the words mean. And more than anything else, know the words that should make you run for the hills. Words like wheat, gluten, and corn, and if you ever see any sugar in a cat or a dog food, any form of sugar, any form of corn, any false colorings, these are big red flags that there's just something all wrong with this, because animals don't care what color their food is, and no canned food's going to look pretty. So you might as well just leave out the fake coloring that can have an adverse effect, and just let it be the color it is after you cook all those things and make them into a stew, right?
Right. Well, I'll definitely get that book, and I'll definitely get that download and change their diet.
That would be great. And not worry about
that, since I had the two cats. The two cats actually who died 2 years ago was this cat's mother and this cat's sister. So I was concerned that she might be predisposed to
I don't believe that kidney disease is genetic, that there's a genetic component. It's definite that all dogs and all cats lose some kidney function as they get older. That's normal, right, Sean? I mean, that just comes with the territory.
That's an aging thing.
But if you feed them properly, if you feed them well and make sure they're hydrated, then it's much less chance,
that helps a lot. That's right.
Yep, that's perfect. And what I'd like to do, Carol, since you were so darling and called in, and the show's still new, so we're thrilled when people find us and make the call, I'd love to send you a coupon for a free container of Precious Cat litter from Catatrek litter from Precious Cat. So if you send me your mailing address to radiopetlady@gmail.com, you're going to get a lovely container of the most Marvy litter to thank you for calling and for caring so much about your cats. I mean, that means a lot to us if someone's willing to say, am I doing the right thing? And then we say, well, maybe not. Yeah. And you say, oh, thank you, let me fix it. As I've said to Sean before, this doesn't happen so much with dog owners. I'm being a dog owner, I can tell you we're a little hard-headed. We're like, yeah, prove it to me. And cat owners say, really? Oh, I wish I'd known. Let me run right out and do the right thing. And as far as the Whole Life Pet Treats, did you send me your address already to get those in the mail as a free sample box?
Yes, and I have to tell you a story. I got it in the mail, right? And I'm standing at the counter, and I'm opening it. And, you know, it comes in these little Ziploc-y packages with different flavors in each one of the packages. So, and I have a good smeller. I smell things really well. And so I opened it, and I smelled it, and I didn't smell anything. And I thought, they're not going to eat this because it doesn't even smell. So I'm standing there reading the little sheet things with it, standing there with it open, and around the corner comes a cat. And she is sniffing. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, there is no way that this cat smells this stuff. There's just no way. And after about another minute, here comes another cat. And so I put it down on the floor for them. And they went after it like they hadn't eaten in 10 days.
Yep. It's amazing.
My cat he grabbed it and took off running because he was afraid somebody was going to get it. I was amazed.
They love it because they recognize that it's pure protein. And although you probably have a much better smeller than me, mine's pretty mediocre. Theirs is 1,000 times better than ours. Well, that's not scientific. It's just much better than ours. I think it's actually 500 times or something. And if there ever is a cat that doesn't respond right away to these freeze-dried protein treats, they suggest that you lightly dampen it, and then that brings out the aroma. And they go totally nuts for it. Yeah, someone got her treats. She opened the box and set it down and was opening the rest of her mail, and she turned around and the whole thing was eaten. The cat had ripped open the plastic. Cats definitely love these treats. So we're thrilled to be able to give them out free to everyone who calls or listens to the show, because it's so rare to find a company where all the protein is human grade. It's all lightly cooked before it's freeze dried. Every single batch is tested for any kind of contamination. So you never have to wonder or worry. You just, you know, made in the USA, American products, made by American people right here in Massachusetts. So it's just good to know. But you send me your mailing address again, okay, so that we can send you one. All right? All right, we're going to be right back. Carol, thank you for the call, sweetie. We're thrilled to help you, and I think you have nothing to worry about. You're within normal range, and the range is wacky anyway. So that's what we've learned tonight. Thanks a lot. We're going to be right back after this break. We have Leah and Lisa. We'll be right back. This show is also brought to you by Whole Life Pet, a family-owned and run company that makes small batches of treats by hand in their state-of-the-art freeze-drying machines at their location in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, using one pure protein, poultry, meat, fish, and cheese. All their products are sourced, produced, and packaged in the United States, assuring quality and safety along with support for the American economy. Send your mailing address to radiopetlady@gmail.com for a free box of Whole Life Pet samples. Support for the show comes from Waruva, a family-owned company that makes canned food for cats and little dogs in a facility that makes people food, which means the ingredients are good enough for us to eat. They use smaller-bodied fish in their recipes for optimal health for your pets. All the varieties of Waruva and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brand, are available at PetFlow.com, which is also a supporter of this program, with special offers at RadioPetLady.com. Dr. Sean's online store at PetCareNaturally.com offers Feel Away for cats and adaptable diffusers and collars for dogs, along with many of the supplements he uses in his own practice of integrative holistic medicine. He has developed a number of healthy products like Itch Relief Shampoo, All Natural Herbal Earwash, Olive Leaf Plus, and CI Support, supplements to support the immune system for pets with cancers. Go to RadioPetLady.com to get the 10% off code and monthly specials for Dr. Sean's store at PetCareNaturally.com. We're back. That number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Please do join us. It's really fun to have 2 hours because the first hour always takes a while, Sean, doesn't it, to kind of get rolling and get warmed up. And then it used to be by the time we were warmed up, it was like, bye-bye. Now we're warmed up and we're still here. That's the beautiful thing.
And we want to talk to more people too.
We do. We love talking to people. It's in our blood. We have Leah, Callie's mom, on line 3. Leah, it's so great. You call in all the time, and we're just delighted about that. You've been writing to me on my Facebook page. That's very fun.
Yes. How are you?
Excellent. How are you doing? How's Callie doing?
Callie's good. Everything's good. I called to let you know. You said to let you know if there's a food that you know, is low in carbohydrate, and I went to catinfo.org, and on Lisa Pearson's chart, for her food comparison chart, and I think I told you in an email, right now I'm feeding Callie chicken and tuna, Fancy Feast flaked, and yes. I know that Purina makes that. According to the chart, it says that the protein is 57%, and then the fat is 35%, and the carbohydrate is 8%, and then the calories is 434%, and then the PHOSDM is like 1.70. Is that okay to feed her that? Continue feeding her that?
Absolutely. I mean, Lisa Pearson wrote the book on diabetes in cats. She's devoted her life to it. And catinfo.org is a fantastic website. It's there mostly for people whose cats have become diabetic, which is caused almost entirely by feeding dry food. And they're able to reverse diabetes in cats if it's caught early enough. Cats that were insulin dependent come off their insulin. Cats that weren't insulin dependent yet, the clock turns back and they're fine as soon as they're fed canned food. So anything that she has on catinfo.org is absolutely reliable, up to the minute, excellent. Love her, love the work she's done. Really dedicated veterinarian. So definitely. And if Fancy Feast is made by Purina, great. Thank God that they're making a food with only 8% carbs in a can. That is marvelous. That's what you want.
Well, I do have a question, though, Tracy, because I've been listening to you all night, and you just said that feeding your cat tuna is not very good to do, you know, every night, and that's what I feed her every night, because I did do what you told me, and I did try all the other pâtés, and I did try what you said on your food list, and she just wouldn't eat them. the only one she will eat, and I will not give her gravy, is the chicken and tuna fancy feast. That's it.
But chicken's the first ingredient, Leah. So in a pet food label, it always goes from the highest percentage to the lowest percentage. So that's why you want to name protein in any food as the first ingredient. Or it can say water for processing. In a canned food, it's okay if that's the first ingredient. Or it'll say broth. But chicken comes before tuna. So chicken is its main ingredient, and tuna is in a lower position. But when you have a cat like yours who's super, super finicky, it's a miracle you could get her off of kitty crack and get her onto wet food at all. A cat that finicky, you want to hope to find more than one flavor that she'll eat. Because once some cats that are this finicky get absolutely hooked on one mouthfeel, one smell, one feel, what if suddenly your store doesn't carry it anymore? What if the company decides to change the formula? It's like a kid in their blankie, you know? Some of these mothers have kids that have a blankie, and they cut it into four pieces, and they put it in the safe because the kid, you know, can't function without their blankie. Some cats get like that about their food. So you want to try and little by little just introduce other things, a teaspoon here or there. Try and get her a little more comfortable with a different experience in her mouth, just so that you want a little bit of nutritional variety too, but also so she doesn't get fixated that that's the only thing she'll eat, and if not, she'll just lie down and die, because cats can't go a long period of time without eating. Well, actually, Sean, I can't go a long time without eating either. So.
I know I can't for sure.
No. So you don't have anything to worry about, and I'm thrilled that you called. I'm thrilled that you got Precious Cat Litter. You're so adorable. You wrote on my Facebook page that ever since you got the Vectra for cats that I think was called Simple Guard that Dr. Elizabeth sent you, that there's no more sign of any fleas in your bed on your cat in your house, and that's really great news.
Yeah, that is. And thank you for the litter coupon, okay?
It's my pleasure. Thank you for being so devoted to your wonderful newly adopted Callie. She's got a very marvelous mother, right, Sean?
I think so. That's a great job.
Well done. Thanks for the call, Leah. You take care, sweetie. The number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And Lisa is calling, who I actually invited to call. Hey, Lisa, welcome to the show.
Hi. It's so great to talk to you, Tracy.
And to you. We've never met, but I learned about your very cool company. I didn't have a chance to tell Sean about it. So would you please tell Sean and the other listeners about your really cool Facebook for animals?
Oh, thank you. It's called PetPav, PetPav.com.
What does PAV stand for? I never knew what the PetPav means.
PetPav stands for Pet Pavilion.
Oh, okay.
It's an acronym for Pet Pavilion, the site that encompasses everything pet, or getting there at least.
How did you wind up creating it?
Oh, well, what happened is one night I have a cat that I wanted to find some information on a local veterinarian, because our veterinarian that I was using moved away. In any case, I went online. I found a couple question and answers and people commenting, but I wanted to get firsthand information from other pet owners. I've always gone on Facebook, and I'm drawn to all the pictures of the pets, not exactly the people. And I thought, what if I could combine putting a profile of your pet like they do on Facebook and make it a pet social network? And that's kind of how it started. And I just thought of the idea and just jumped in. And here I am a year and a half later.
And how many – are there tons of people that have wanted to Facebook their pets or PetPav their pets?
Well, PetPav.com, we've had – you know, we're a startup, so we're growing really well. I'm happy with the numbers and met some really great people that they put up – there's a lot of fun things you can do on the site. You can just – you make friends with other animal owners. You can – we have a news feed. Like on Facebook, the news feed is where you get information. It's called Pet Working. So you can really network with other pets, find out solutions to what's going wrong with your pet, ask questions. I write also weekly articles on pet care, pet advice. If you have a pet business, similar to Facebook, you can put a profile of your business and then connect directly with the other pets, the dogs and cats and pigs and whomever is your target audience. So it's a really good way for them to connect with people, and it's free.
You mean it would be free for us to put our radio show on there and connect with your followers? Really?
Absolutely.
So, Sean, this is going to be my job.
Yeah, for the business.
Sean is so not the social media guy, although he does hang out with a lot of Yahoo groups. I must say, you have a lot of followers.
I'm more of a social butterfly, as they say.
I can see that it's going to be on PetPad for this show, Lisa. But
I didn't become a vet because of my looks. Let's put it that way.
Oh, come on! You did.
Well, I can't see you, so maybe it's your personality.
I hope I have a decent personality. I think Tracy would say I do.
I would definitely say he also could do magic. So he does the charm and the magic at the vet conference he's going to.
That's a combination.
Yeah,
a little bit, yeah.
So I need to get Sean's animals on PetPav. I need to get mine there. I kind of signed up, but then I didn't do all the dirty work, which is a picture and description. You have to do all of that and really commit yourself to it, right, to really jump in.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can fill out as much information as you want. If you want to put a profile for your radio network, you can. If you want one for your dog, you can. But you can only put one profile per email address.
Okay.
So if you have more than one animal, you have to have three different email addresses, or you just put your one dog or your main dog is your main spokesperson, per se, spokes dog. Right. And then you could put photos of the rest of your family on the site.
Very cute. This sounds really fun. And how do you get the word out to people about it? Just social media, probably,
social media,
right?
Twitter, Facebook. You go on the Radio Pet Show, your show.
Yeah, and just join PetPav. It's free and it's fun.
Exactly. LinkedIn, you know, just the typical social networks to get out there. And then, you know, I'm writing articles, so that helps getting content out there, try to bring people onto the site.
That's
so good.
We support entrepreneurs. Being entrepreneurs ourselves, we're all for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
this is America, so we might as well, embrace it and go for it, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so I'm going to be a good PetPav person, and I'm going to put Radio Pet Lady Network and Cat Chat and Dog Talk on there, and I'll put a picture of Sean up so everyone can see he's adorable and could easily have been many things in life.
Like, I actually have a caricature of me you could put up.
Oh, I'd like that.
I have to send you that. It actually was a caricature of me. It's a really good one, actually. It's for American Kennel Club, AKC Family Dog Magazine. I write a column for them every other month. So they started with that. I think they run an actual picture now, but that was kind of the introduction to my column for them a couple of years ago.
Nice. All right,
great.
So Lisa, you're gonna get that caricature of Dr. Sean. It's gonna be right up on
PetPav.
Terrific. Well, listen, congratulations. I'm very glad you called in. It's wonderful to meet you. And I say rah-rah for anybody with a vision of how things could be, might be, should be, and you're doing it. Good for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, right back at you guys for having a wonderful radio show.
Thank you for joining us.
I mean, how great is that?
We love having you here, and I'll have to spend time on PetPav and encourage more of your animal listeners to get their humans to listen and call in. Thanks a lot, Lisa.
Perfect. Thank you. Take care.
And you. Bye-bye. Isn't that great? You know what? You never know. There's so many people have tried to do that, and she'll succeed at it. Everything's timing, you know? I knew people 5, 6, 8 years ago trying to do kind of, you know, a social place for people and their dogs and cats to hang out, and people weren't using the internet as much. They really weren't into social media, so the time was just too soon. I hope for her sake that she's hit the time right, and for our sake.
I think so.
We're going to be a big presence on PetPav. You'll never know, Sean. You're busy, you know, sorting out people's anal glands, so I'm the one who's going to.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, I mean, everyone has to do the dirty work, right? That's my dirty work. The hard work.
Can I tell you a story about anal glands since you brought that up?
I could. Oh, wait. We have to go to a break so that we
let's
can
take our break. People can get ready for this. We need a break.
It's going to be anal glands when we come back. Don't go away. We'll be right back. This show is supported by the pheromone products Feelaway for cats and Adaptil for dogs, which are used to create a positive environment for pets experiencing any kind of stress. Pheromones are chemical communicators that replicate a signal of comfort in your pet's brain and are especially comforting for newly adopted cats and dogs. Feelaway diffusers and spray for cats help with feline behavior issues in a multi-cat household, for out-of-litter box issues, and to get a cat used to her carrier for travel or vet visits. Adaptil for dogs helps alleviate anxiety and stress-related symptoms in puppies and adult dogs and comes in a diffuser, spray, and the most effective way, a collar. You can find the pheromone products, Feelaway and Adaptil, through the link at RadioPetLady.com to Dr. Sean's own website store, PetCareNaturally.com. Cat Chat and Dog Talk is also brought to you by Platinum Performance, a supplement scientifically shown to improve the cognitive ability of dogs in a study designed to measure their learning ability. The dogs supplemented with Platinum Performance Canine Wellness learn faster than every other dog in the control group, navigating through a maze with greater ease than the ones not taking the supplement. When the dogs were tested on how well they remembered the skills learned in the first phase, dogs on Platinum Performance Canine Wellness demonstrated superior memory by completing the tasks more quickly. To give your aging dog that mental edge, especially as she gets older, go to the RadioPetLady.com website to find free samples and learn more. Vector 3D for Dogs also brings you this show. It is a safe and effective topical anti-tick and flea treatment you put on your dog's skin once a month to repel ticks, fleas, mosquitoes, sandflies, lice, and mites. In scientific tests, Vector 3D was shown to kill ticks fast and reliably for the entire month. Unlike older products, which don't last the full 30 days and only kill ticks that bite your dog, which actually transmits Lyme and other tick-borne diseases, with Vector 3D, ticks are killed just by coming into contact with your dog, but it's still safe for the people in your family. Vector for Dogs and Cats is the anti-flea topical treatment that not only repels and kills fleas, but kills all three life cycles of the flea, ridding you of them permanently. Vectra is only available from practicing veterinarians. To learn more and find out how your own vet can get the Vectra products, go to RadioPetLady.com. We're back. And what you've all been waiting for, the anal gland story from Dr. Sean, the natural vet.
Now, Tracy, you need to sit down for this, okay? Because if you think I'm a funny person, you're going to love this, okay? All right, so pet owners always use the term anal glands when they're referring to squeezing the dog's rear end. There's sometimes cats, but it's usually more of a dog problem. And when I went to school, you know, I really learned from a number of professors that you really need to be anatomically correct when you refer to body parts, because there are different body parts with similar names. And what dogs and some cats have problems with is not really anal glands, but anal sacs, these little sacs side of the anus that actually have glands in there. Now, people, dogs, cats, all animals have anal glands. People don't have anal sacs. Dogs and cats and ferrets have anal sacs. That's right. Oh, we'd be all be scooting our rear ends on the ground all the time. So when you go to the doctor, technically what you're asking him to do is your dog's anal sacs have become impacted from the glands in the anal sacs that produces very foul-smelling secretion. And some dogs, we don't always know why, just get impacted anal sacs. So, you know, the reason we don't always refer to them as anal sacs reminds me of a story that another vet told me where the owner had made an appointment to have the dogs, and he said anal glands incorrectly, but anal glands squeezed. And so the owner came into the office, and the young lady at the desk said, "Oh, you're here for your anal sacs?" And he thought she was saying anal sex. So sometimes we have to say anal glands, even though that's not anatomically correct, and I get on my soapbox about this, but sometimes if you say anal sacs and don't pronounce things correctly, an owner might get offended. But we're really not treating anal glands, we're treating anal sac problems.
And so did this person storm out of the clinic, or
no, he was just kind
dinner?
Of taken aback. Well, I don't know. He didn't have any flowers with him during the visit. I'm not sure. But we have to be obviously appropriate. And even though words sometimes sound alike, like I said, I'm just kind of anal about this, I guess.
Not to
I really like things to be said correctly. I always try to correct my staff and say, you know, it's not anal glands. That's incorrect.
You're right. You're right. It's the sac that's inside there. There is a company that you like very much that has a product, I don't know if you've used it much, that,
yes, sure.
That's supposed to reduce the impaction of anal glands in dogs, I guess, that are prone to it. How could it do that? Do you happen to know what their
fiber in there. I actually have a private label version that's on my website, and you can give out the website in a minute, that has – it's called Scoot No More, and it actually helps control – excess buildup of that material in the anal sac. So if your dog or cat has problems with that, or I've also noticed because of the fiber in there, we also use it as a GI supplement for pets maybe that have some diarrhea or constipation issues. You sprinkle it right on the food, the pet loves it. And I've actually seen in my practice, I actually started testing this product for Nature Vets about a year ago. It really does help decrease the number of times people need to bring their pets in for these expressions of these anal sacs. You can go to my website and just check it out. It's like under $20. It's very inexpensive.
When I had written to the people at Nature Vets and I said Scoot No More, she said that's somebody else's product.
So well, I actually private labeled it with that name. Their product is called No More Scoot.
I see.
You know, depending on if you can find that, fine. If not, like I said, I want people to go to
I'd rather people buy it from you because somebody has to keep your child fed, you know. I mean, people
– there's a link to my site.
That's right. And there's a wonderful discount code, and we all love a bargain. So No More Scoot, it's basically fiber?
It's different kinds of fiber. It has some pumpkin and but it's a proprietary blend, and it really, really does help quite a bit. It really does.
Nice. So by having more fiber, when they defecate, it creates more pressure on those sacs?
Yes, hoping that they're going to go more regularly, and as a result, you know, the anal sac should be emptied anyway when the pets are going to the bathroom. So if you're going more frequently, you've got a greater chance to empty the anal sac.
And is this one of the things that, in theory, is one of the reasons that dogs sniff around each other's poop so much? It's not the poop, but it's actually the
– it's actually the secretions from those glands. That, you know, the way I was taught about anal sac secretions is they're kind of like the scent glands on a skunk, which basically are anal sacs. And dogs and cats use these as marking behaviors. Other animals do too. When they have a bowel movement, that little glandular material gets on the bowel movement, on the feces, and that's one of the reasons they sniff a lot, because they can detect if it's their territory or not. They can't just detect, obviously, by looking at that. So they have to use their own sense of smell, and that's the whole purpose. It's really more of a marking thing.
And also, supposedly, you can pick up, if you have such a clever nose, all kinds of information about the person who left it behind, like if they're a female who might be in heat or a male that's intact. Is that right? That some of those hormonal smells may come with it as well?
Yes, through the urine as well. That's why a lot of animals will mark cats, especially with that urine, because they can signal when they're in heat or if it's a male marking his territory to let other males know, you know, don't come in this area, etc.
This is something that we should all consider. Maybe we could have this instead of drones and warfare. Just have everyone peeing on borders, you know? I mean, as a marking idea, I think there's so much for us to learn from the animal world, you know? I mean, it's a way to keep a peaceable kingdom.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
You mark your boundaries and your borders, and there you have it. All right, let me see if I have another question that we haven't gotten to
yet. Tell people how to reach you by email so that we can get these great questions.
That's a good point. RadioPetLady@gmail.com. Quite straightforward. RadioPetLady@gmail.com. And the website is RadioPetLady.com. You know, one of the things also that we should be prepping people for, in the same way that we had no way to prep our listeners on the Martha Stewart channel of SiriusXM to tell them, it looked like it was curtains for the channel and they'd be losing us soon. We're very thrilled how many of you are listening here. We know you're listening. And just like it used to be before, often many of you listen, you don't necessarily call. As one person said, I've listened to you for 5 years. I just don't have a problem, but I love listening, but I have nothing to call in about because I don't have a problem. But
listening is good.
Listening's excellent because then, you know, you learn a little bit more. You have a different perspective about something. Maybe you go and get Elizabeth Hodgkin's book, Your Cat, or you get one of Dr. Sean's marvelous books, all of which you'll see at PetCareNaturally.com. But if you want the discount, you have to go to RadioPetLady.com first. But I think that we should be
promoting to people the fact that in just a few weeks, maybe as few as 3 weeks or even as 2 weeks, you will not have to go to jump through so many hoops to listen to this show and listen to it just off of the website. It's going to be on a full internet network. So,
yay,
you're going to be able to listen from smartphones and pads and devices of every sort. There's going to be apps that are being furiously written. I don't know how you write an app, but people who do that for a living are doing that. And there won't just be Sean and myself. There's going to be a bunch of other shows so that you have your choice of listening to us. And of course, you must listen to us because we are the cornerstone show of the network. But every single day of the week, there'll be a repeat of this show at different times, because, or maybe we should have the same time every day. We haven't quite figured it out. This is one of those conundrums. We'd love to know what you all think, because if you're busy on a Tuesday night but not on other nights, maybe we should replay this show every night at the same time so that at some point during the week, many more people that have different schedules have a chance to listen. But some of the other shows that we have, I think it's really worth talking about, because these are really a family. I mean, we all are interested in what each other has to say, all there to support questions and callers. And we might get a question that we aren't so sure about, and we would recommend it to another one of the shows. And certainly there'll be many callers on other shows who may have holistic type questions. And really, Sean would be the one to answer that, because you've devoted your life to holistic medicine. So just to give you an idea of some of the other shows, on Mondays, we're going to have a show called The Expert Vet, and that's Dr. Donna Spector, who will be like a forensic veterinarian helping people figure out hard-to-diagnose and hard-to-treat problems. She's a board-certified internist, and she does give advice to a lot of other veterinarians who have complicated medical situations. So she'll be there to either answer emails from people who've written in with chronic, difficult problems, or answer the calls live. We're going to have Arden Moore, who people adore. She has written, I think, 20-something pet books, like the Cat Behavior Answer Book and the Dog Behavior Answer Book. She's very fun. She's very funny. She's a master teacher of pet CPR and pet first aid. And she's actually going to also be the headliner on a Petitude cruise in October. So 500 people without their pets are going to go on this cruise.
And how come she's not inviting us to go speak?
I'm wondering about that. I'm working on it.
Okay.
on it. Don't you worry.
They must need a magician on that show.
They do totally need a magician. And what if she falls overboard? They should have us there just in case we push her over.
To wave goodbye. That's right.
Bye, Arden.
I know Arden. She's very sweet.
She's absolutely adorable. Amy Shojai is going to have a show with me on Monday nights called Cat Crazy.
She's pretty nice, too.
She's very nice.
We got some good people on our network, don't we?
Yeah, we do, sweetie.
We have, like, the best of the best.
That's what we're trying to have, is the creme de la creme. So
we've got it.
Yeah, we're working on it. And then we have Greg Cleva is joining us. He also used to have a show on the Martha Channel called It's a Dog's Life. He's a dog trainer. A lot of the Howard Stern listeners are cuckoo for Greg. And he was on the Martha TV show a bunch of times demonstrating various things with dogs. So he's got a lot of followers that will be eager to get his dog training and dog behavior advice. And then we have a show called – oh, then we have a show with the wonderful couple who created Dog Tipper and CatTipper.com. And they're working on a series of books about traveling with dogs. So their show is called Dog Travel Experts, and it's going to be about everything from going to the woods with your dog, to the mountains, the beach, in a car, in a plane, on a boat. And they're just passionate about, you know, trying to include your dogs in as much of what you do as possible. And they'll be talking about all kinds of products and safety things, and it'll be very fun. I mean, the number of companies that make things for dogs on the go, including little – this is going to crack you up – pup tents. They're like little tents for dogs. Mm-hmm. If you're camping out, there's a pup tent for the pup. Or if it's very, very hot out, it's a little tent that could go in. And then the last one that I'm really excited about, because we just really hooked up today, is called Pet Food Advisors. And my co-host is going to be Sean Delaney, who is one of only 60 board-certified animal veterinary nutritionists, and he has a company called Balance It, which gives advice on how to home prepare with supplementation for people that either want to home cook but realize that it's not a balanced meal to just throw any old thing together, or pets that have medical problems that want a more personalized kind of diet. But he wrote the only textbook, the only medical nutritional textbook for veterinarians that was not financed by a pet food company. It's a real, you know, Wiley textbook.
Okay.
I just ordered a copy. It's $100. So after I look at it, I'm going to send it to you, and you can look at it and send it back to me. Because for $100, right. Share. But he's passionate about educating people.
You need to get his publisher to send us some comp copies for our show.
Wiley Blackwell, you know, this company, they don't.
They'll send us some stuff for free.
Okay, they're going to send it to you for free because you're a vet. I paid for it.
Tell them you won one for Tom. We have a radio show, and we want to have the author on, and could they send us a couple of comp copies?
Okay.
I bet they'll do it.
On that. Okay, all right.
Seriously, then you can send your book back. Well, really, because they'll send you for free. They send me books all the time.
That's a good point. In fact, we're going to start having authors on the show, too.
That's what we need to do.
Really fun. There's so many different books about dogs and cats. And
authors. And we actually have two authors on our show right now.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Two authors on the show right now. Yes. In fact, you could buy our books any day of the week, but buy Sean's books first because he actually gets a royalty and I don't. So you go to RadioPetLady.com and then you go to PetCareNaturally.com. You get the 10% off. He has absolutely marvelous books. If you're at all interested in trying to incorporate holistic thinking and natural supplementation in your pet's wellness or treatment program, it really is a good way to understand why he gives the advice he does and what these supplements are and how they work. On the other hand, you could just take his advice and just buy them from PetCareNaturally.com and just have faith. I like to just go on blind faith myself. Sometimes that's less exhausting, you know, than trying to figure it out. It just takes a lot out of you. Okay, we're going to go for a break. When we come back, maybe we'll surprise each other with, let's think of a topic as thrilling as anal gland sacs or anal sac glands. We're going to be right back, and you all just sit tight, or if you want to make a call, there's still time. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Give us a call. Join us. We'd love to talk to you, and we'll be right back. Support for this show comes from Woruva, the pet food company that thinks dogs and cats should eat as well as we do. So their foods are made in a human food facility from ingredients we could eat ourselves. We salute Woruva's ethical decision to not make any dry food because they know that for optimal wellness, small dogs don't need highly processed carbohydrates, and that true health for cats who are obligate carnivores means they should eat only meat. Woruva's many different canned recipes, cats in the kitchen in pouches, and their more economical BFF, best feline friend, all offer your pets a wide variety of flavors and ingredients. Go to RadioPetLady.com for more information. Cat Chat and Dog Talk is brought to you with the support of Goo Silver, a holistic supplement for senior canines developed by a veterinarian to help aging dogs maintain mental sharpness and physical well-being. Goo Silver is a peanut butter-based lickable product with all-natural ingredients that is a broad-spectrum canine supplement addressing the special needs of your aging dog's mental state, anti-inflammatory ingredients for joint discomfort from arthritis, and antioxidants for his immune system. Visit GooSilver.com for more information. Dr. Sean's online store at PetCareNaturally.com offers feel-away for cats and adaptable diffusers and collars for dogs, along with many of the supplements he uses in his practice of integrative holistic medicine in Plano, Texas. He has also developed a number of healthy products like itch relief shampoo, all-natural herbal earwash, olive leaf plus, and CI support, supplements to support the immune system for pets with cancers. Go to RadioPetLady.com to get the 10% off code and monthly specials for Dr. Sean's store at PetCareNaturally.com. So here's a question. It's not as thrilling as anal sex, I have to say. But
not much is.
Not much is. I've sort of – you set the bar so high with that. Where do we go from there? Well, I have a question about when you're giving antibiotics – and what that does to the
good question. All right.
Because my Scooby has just today gotten a prescription for 21 days at $300.
For what problem?
Well, MRS, what is it?
MRSA?
Yes, MRSA.
Really?
Yeah. So do you want to talk a little about Beck? Because I'd love to know more about it. It's an antibiotic. He does. In his knee, there's a sore that was just a little bit of like a leaky place over the in the old incision for one of his ACL repairs.
And they actually cultured some staff. Yeah. MRSA's methicillin-resistant staph is the thing we're always trying to avoid, especially in people, because we don't have many good antibiotics that can kill that. Actually, it can kill you because we don't have a lot of good antibiotics. So they cultured that from his wound.
Yes.
And what was the name of the antibiotics they chose?
Okay, so, you know, like I become that dopey person that has to run and get the bottle. I'll run and get the bottle after the next break, but...
But it was an expensive antibiotic, obviously.
Yeah, wildly expensive, but as I said to the vet, he said, look, we've already tried Cipro, I think we tried.
Yeah.
We tried Cipro, and he said, but, you know, we can't use a human one at this point. We have to go with a vet-only one.
Yeah, and he tried to do that. Well, okay, so basically for the MRSA, keep the wound clean. Yes, you or your husband or other pets can catch this. I mean, this is one of the few things, really, that you have to worry about catching from your pet. So as long as you're cleaning your hands, washing any bedding that he's laying on, if he lays on the ground, clean that up. You know, you're probably going to be okay. If you have any open wounds, obviously wear gloves. But as far as the gut, anytime we're using antibiotics, especially for more than a week, and for MRSA you sometimes have to go more than a week, I administer probiotics, and I don't give it the same time as the antibiotic, either an hour before or hour after, doesn't matter, at several times a day, just like the antibiotic. And basically you're just trying to maintain healthy microflora of the gut.
Yes.
A known side effect of antibiotics, of all antibiotics, is diarrhea, sometimes worse with some antibiotics than others. So we just don't want to have that side effect. So good luck with that, because that is a tough thing, and you've got to keep up with that and make sure they also do the follow-up culture. Of course, you know, there are a lot of things you can do to help support the immune system as well. Go to petcarenatural.com. You can find those things. But do the antibiotics, obviously. Keep the wound clean, and probably you're going to be okay. It's a tough thing, but I think you'll be all right.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, the idea that it's contagious to the other animals. I mean, we have three big dogs, and every single room in the house has three big dog beds, and no one owns one bed or another, so there's a lot of switching around of beds. Should I be immediately stripping all these beds and cleaning them in hot water in a very hot dryer, like on a
very? I think I would do your best to keep them clean. You know, it's one of those things where I don't want to go overboard, because staph is all around us, and many people and pets harbor MRSA, especially people in their nasal cavity. That can be kind of Well, staph is normal. MRSA is not as normal, but we can harbor it. And the main thing is, if you have a compromised immune system, in this case, obviously a closed area, the joint that opened up and got infected. But if you've got a wound draining the MRSA, then there is a risk. Now, of course, if the antibiotic works, then technically there's not going to be a lot of staph coming out of that wound. You still need to go for the whole 3 or 4 week period. But I would just say, if you have multiple pets, you obviously can't shelter everyone. You can't board the dog for a month. I'm not suggesting that. But I would try to make sure the wound stays clean. You can clean it topically. Peroxide or anything you want is fine. And if the pets are all sharing bedding, I try and at least wash the bedding daily and do what you can for the pets' systems.
What's really important, because I didn't realize it was that bad, although they did send a bunch of literature home with the antibiotics. I was like, wow, this sounds like Ebola virus or something. Well, I have to tell you that when I came home from the visit on 5 days ago, when they took the culture and sent it out, he said, you know, use hot compresses. This is before the culture came back. Use hot compresses on the wound, because it was kind of swollen around it. It was a tiny, tiny little pinprick of drainage. Use hot compresses to help with the drainage. I didn't use gloves. I just put gauze in hot water and put it on him and squeezed it out and put it on him and squeezed it out and didn't even wash my hands afterwards. Yike. So how would I know if I got MRSA? Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, you would have some sort of draining wound or possibly something worse. But I think you're okay. I would just say your vet probably should have told you to go overboard, because, you know, there's also a legal liability. If we don't warn people of this and you die of MRSA, then your husband might not like me too much. He might get upset with me.
He's very proud of you for saving me, but he'll have to burn down the vet hospital. It'd be so unfortunate for all the other people
that would not be good.
Out of the hospital. So the probiotic. So gosh, keep the wound clean. I was sort of thinking, since he's not licking it, and yes, it's red and swollen and a little bit open, not too swollen, rather than putting something on it to clean it or mess with it, I don't really want to do anything to it to not encourage him, to discourage him from licking it. And he's being so good. He's leaving it alone. So is there an issue about that with a wound of or an irritated place that the more we do to it may then encourage the dog to do more to it?
You don't want to go overboard, but the dog may lick it anyway. You just want to do your best to keep it clean. I don't know if you still need to do the hot compresses if it's opened up and draining, or if it's even trying to heal, I'd let it heal. But otherwise, I think that we'd be doing fine. Just keep it clean and wash your hands.
So your basic hygiene, which I should have thought of myself, I shouldn't have needed a vet to tell me that, but sometimes people are dim-witted, even those at the forefront of knowledge. Is the amount of probiotics in yogurt good enough, or do you need some?
I'd probably do more. Yogurt's fine, but I would get, like, we talked about NatureVet earlier with the no-scoot powder. I like their enzymes and probiotics, which I think is also on my website. It's inexpensive. Throw it on their food. They get digestive enzymes plus probiotics, easy to give.
And you wait an hour before or after the actual antibiotic?
Yeah, if you give it at the same time the antibiotic is going to kill the probiotics because those are bacteria, which, antibiotics will kill that.
Which is something that people don't always think of. I mean, people often realize that they need more, and probiotics when they're taking antibiotics, but it has to be at a different time.
Ideally, yeah, you don't want to take them the same time, which a lot of people make that mistake. Now, you could take the antibiotic. I like to take antibiotics with food usually, but if you give the probiotic a little bit before or after, you're going to be fine.
This antibiotic said, yes, give it with food. And you like the same thing.
That's
going to
basically reduce the chance of there being any vomiting or diet. Well, vomiting especially.
I see. Well, that makes sense. So it's kind of dramatic that I wound up being this person with this scary antibiotic resistant infection. But, it's come and go from this area. It's come and then it seemed to resolve. Would that be typical of MRSA?
Well,
it sounds like something that would take over and kill you.
Yeah, but sometimes it stays localized, which of course is what you want. But, people, and I don't know if any pets, but I know people have died of MRSA when it gets in the bloodstream and then we can't fight it. And we only have literally a few IV antibiotics when it gets that way. And that's one of the reasons we try to tell people not to overuse antibiotics for things that don't that, because we need to save antibiotics for life-threatening problems. And in veterinary medicine, we don't want to use the people antibiotics for MRSA if we can avoid it, because unfortunately, and I hate to say this because I own pets myself, but we have to put people higher up than a pet. So, if the pet dies, that's unfortunate, but we don't want to have so much resistance that people are going to die of the same infection.
So if you were to use the biggest guns of guns, which would be the human drug for MRSA on a dog, and people would the MRSA bug, as it were, become immune to that antibiotic because it was misused? In other words, not given for the
first time you use it. But the way bacterial resistance works is the more you use something, this is true with chemotherapy and cancer cells. So the more we're using drug, there may be some bacteria that survive the drug. Not enough bacteria.
I see.
So those bacteria are going to multiply. When they multiply, they're transmitting through their DNA the genes that allow the next generation of bacteria to be resistant to the antibiotic. And when you have people sharing bacteria, over the years, then all of a sudden we have this population of bacteria that has developed resistance. And, what's interesting to me, whether we're talking about a cancer cell resistant to chemotherapy or bacteria or viruses resistant to drugs, is how God developed these organisms, these little one-cell organisms that somehow just develop, just the gene mutates and it allows that thing to survive and then they pass it along. It's just fascinating that this little cell can kill someone or a pet just from a simple little mutation of a gene, just from a little bit of extra exposure that it or its parents survived exposure to the drug or the chemotherapy, the antibiotic.
Well, of course, it's the most powerful ones that do survive. So then you have a super strain of bugs. And, we call viruses a bug. And if you look at a cockroach or a tick, They've actually now found ticks, speaking of Vectra and the importance of using that topical antiparasiticide, they've found ticks in with mummies that were tens of thousands of years old. That's how long ticks, if you want to think of a bug you can see as opposed to a one-cell bug, how long they've been able to survive, God knows, you know, the number of animals and creatures that died off. They've survived it all. So that's a scary thought. We're going to go to another break. And while we go to the break, I'm going to go find the name of the antibiotic and tell you.
Very good.
Right back. Okay. Support for this show comes from The Honest Kitchen, a family-owned company that makes 100% human-grade dehydrated pet foods, which are created in a human food facility, and batches are actually tested by people. The Honest Kitchen's all-natural, clean, safe products can assist cats and dogs with chronic health problems like itchy skin, ear infections, and GI upset, which are often linked to a poor quality or inappropriate diet. Go to RadioPetLady.com for information on free samples and where to call the company for a complimentary consultation to find out which recipe is right for your pet. This show is supported by Platinum Performance, where they know that comprehensive health for dogs, cats, and people begins one cell at a time. Platinum Performance Canine Wellness and Performance Formula is a comprehensive nutritional foundation formula for all dogs, which addresses canine health at the cellular level, providing a special blend of more than 55 nutrients that improves the fundamental health of each of your dog's 12 trillion cells. Healthy cells means a healthy dog. That's the Platinum difference. Platinum Performance Feline Wellness Formula contains taurine in every teaspoon, an amino acid that helps promote cardiac health in cats. Go to RadioPetLady.com to get the number to call for free samples and more information. I'm back, and the name of the antibiotic is Zenaquin, Z-E-N-I-Quin.
Okay, there you go. So that's a pretty strong one, and it's the new one, so that it should work.
Have you had cases like this of a dog who had some sort of infection and you used the antibiotics you would ordinarily use and they didn't get better, and then you cultured it and found that he had a resistant strain? Is this very rare?
I haven't diagnosed MRSA in my own practice yet, although I've seen some pets who were referred to me for some natural immune support for pets with MRSA. But it's not unusual to use an antibiotic, and then if it's not working, look at the culture and realize maybe we should have chosen another one. People need to also know that when you're looking at a culture, the culture tells us in a laboratory environment, in a petri dish, which antibiotics are killing the bacteria, in this case MRSA, growing in the petri dish, or which ones are most likely to. That doesn't transmit or translate 100% to what happens in the pet's body. So you say because the culture said Zenaquin should work, it's going to work. What it's telling you is it's not showing resistance to Zenaquin in the lab, and therefore there's a very good chance this antibiotic would work over another one, like a plain penicillin would never work, amoxicillin would not work for staph, much less MRSA. And we know that through many years of history, but also antibiotics and bacteria have certain patterns. Certain classes of bacteria are more likely to respond to one than the other, but the culture gives us a little more information and says, hey, Zenaquin works in the lab. Can't guarantee it's going to work in Tracy's dog, but it's got a high chance of doing so. And that's why, like I said, even if your dog looks better, if there's any drainage, I would still do a follow-up to make sure we use the right antibiotic long enough. We might need to go longer than a few weeks.
And you can't use anything topically, right? I mean, even if you keep a dog from licking.
You know, you're going to have to do more than topical. You have to do, obviously, oral. But if you're keeping the wound clean, that's fine. I don't think something like a Neosporin is going to kill MRSA. Oxide will certainly keep the area clean, and will kill really most bacteria on contact, especially if you're wiping the exited away. I think you'll be okay.
Oh, cool. So I can just drizzle a little peroxide on it and let it bubble up a bit. Is that the best way to use peroxide?
Yeah, that's fine.
As opposed to putting it on with gauze or with a cotton. I was always told you were meant to just pour a little bit of peroxide on. Is that true?
Either way you've got is fine. I mean, I don't know. You know, you don't want to pour it on and get the pet all soaking wet and everything. But I would put a little on the gauze and kind of clean the area out of the way.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to have to strip 3, 6, 9, 12 dog beds and get them all in hot water and a hot dryer. As I understand it, for cleanliness and for sterilization, the hot dryer does more than the washing in a way, right? Isn't that true?
You know, as long as you're using heat, whether it's – I like hot water. I mean, the dryer is – you know, unless you put it in the air, you're obviously going to use some hot drying. I would just say wash in hot water. you can just use whatever soap you put in there is fine. And it shouldn't be a problem.
Well, all right. I'm going to have to start to wear gloves and a mask and a gown.
Did I mention also that while the dog's being treated, you can't leave your house? Husband has to go do everything for you. You can't go anywhere.
What about my tennis that I live for? Have you ever thought about that? I will become a monster without my tennis. Yeah, we do. We have a bubble with three fabulous courts.
Oh, you have to wear a bubble suit.
Oh, a bubble suit. No, the actual courts have a bubble over them. That'd be hilarious. Go like the helium Michelin man.
I have a bubble suit here at home. I could ship it to you.
Really? How handy of you. I think you should wear that during your magic show at the vet conference.
I scared the heck out of my daughter and her friends when they were sleeping over and they were like 10 years old.
Well, okay. After you send me a picture of you wearing it, I'll decide if I want to wear it.
I'll take a picture. That would be good.
Well, it looks good
for our website.
Say that one more time.
Good for our radio show website.
Our radio show website is going to launch within days. RadioPetLady.com.
We could get aliens from all over the universe to listen and tune in if they saw me in a bubble suit.
Call in. I'd like to see if I could understand the questions the aliens might ask.
No, aliens do have anal glands, by the way.
Oh, they don't have anal sacs. They fully have anal glands.
That's right.
Well, that's good. Well, we've cleared that up, and I'm sure that isn't something you learned in vet school. I'm understanding from Doug that our time is up. Hard to believe.
That's probably good, isn't it? Because I think we're kind of deteriorating here.
I think we are. We're falling into like frat boy humor. Well, I'm a little nervous about the MRSA, so it's probably what's made me be silly.
You're doing a good job, though. I think you'll be fine.
And Vaxacheck. Everybody has to go and get Vaxacheck before you see your vet. Yeah. Ask them to have Vaxacheck because that's what I'm going to be doing before I go back, is get his little blood titers tested. Thank you, Dr. Sean, for being a wonderful co-host.
We had a good time tonight.
We really did, and it was lovely that we had calls, and there'll be more all the time as people find us more easily. But we seem to be able to amuse and entertain and educate each other without a whole lot of interference.
That's true.
Have a great night. Take care.